Rabbi, so let us begin. We are up to the laws of Tseida. The laws of Tseida begin as just two or three seifim. It is halacha. Nunbeis. Also, lotsut shum baal chai b'shabbos. It is forbidden to trap any living creature on Shabbos. Ve'afilu parosh, even a flea. Osir litvos. We're going to discuss the practical halachas in a few moments. We'll just see what it says here. The ach im hi al guf adam the ok tzaso. If this creature is on your skin and it's about to take a nice bite, it's about to have lunch, and you will be its lunch. Mut, then you are allowed to trap it. Are you allowed to kill it? It says here no. Mutter, then it's mutter to trap it. You can trap it. You can capture it. Mutter mishwai mishum tsara the goof of mutter litla ulazarka. You can pick it up. You can remove from your skin and you can throw it away. Avul also lahargo. You're not allowed to kill a living creature on Shabbos because that's a tolada of shoychet. Even if there is no blood, one of the lametes malachas is shoychet. You may not slaughter an animal on Shabbos, and therefore, as a tolada of that, you may not kill any living creature if it does not pose a threat to your life. These creatures will come to a bee in a few moments. We're going to come to a wasp and a bee in a few moments. We'll, in one moment. But right now, let's first discuss something which is not life-threatening, a fly, or in this case, some type of a creature, the parosh, this flea, which is not life-threatening.
A mosquito
can be life-threatening at some time. It can be the West Nile virus, and it's not even so similar. And okay, so we'll come to that in a few moments. But if it's, there is no sakana like flies. There is no hetzer to kill flies in Shabbos. That's a very similar example. Unless you'll tell me, people are starting to say that flies today, they're full of disease because they carry germs, they go. So if you're going to let the fly live, it's going to spread the germs. Is that true or not? Perhaps it is. If that would be the situation where you can involve the sakana, then indeed, it may be more. Because killing a fly is not a melacha deraisa. It's because you're not killing it because you want it. You're killing it to eliminate. Eliminate it. The ma'aseh shechit in the Mishkan was a killing for a constructive purpose. You killed it in order to retrieve its hides, to use the hides for you want something out of the creature. You need it. You need its. Whatever it was for constructive purposes. Whereas killing a fly or killing all these creatures, it is just to get rid of them. They're a nuisance. So at best, the malacha she'enet shrich l'gufa, when there is a need, this tsar, there's a semi-sakana, then indeed it would be mutter. But if there is no need whatsoever, there's a fly, it's just getting annoying you and you don't feel it's posing for you any sakana, you would not be allowed to kill it on Shabbos. And that's what it says when it comes over here to this parish. Let's go further. We'll discuss more things in a few moments. Lice come from sweat. In other words, he wants to suggest they don't come from eggs. Spontaneous generation. He's discussing here the science of the times, that it's not nikar leinam, anything which we know that there is no such thing as spontaneous generation. Everything comes from an egg. Everything comes from a source. And in order for there to be a malacha deraisa of shechet, it must come from a mother, it must come from an egg, it must come from a source. So that's only things which come from a source that we can see with the naked eye. Any creature. Oh, what happened? So, you hear me something? Oh, fellow, thank you very much. Thank you. Something which cannot be seen by the naked eye in halacha is not viewed as coming from a source, and it would then be mut. Now, the Kitzur Shulchan, the Mishnah, the Chofetz Chaim writes, the art school Kitzur Shulchan, they write that lice today we can see the eggs. The nits can be seen leinayim. So he says that what the Kitzur Shulchan is referring to has to be something that we're not familiar with. A certain type of lice that was so small you cannot see the eggs. And therefore he says you can kill them on Shabbos. If you have there are lice on your head or on a child's head, they can be killed. It's not a tolada of shechet because these lice do not come from eggs. They develop spontaneously. Problem is, we know that's not so. We can actually see with our own eyes the eggs. the nits of the lice. So he's referring over here to a different type, a different min of lice that we are not familiar with, and he paskins that the lice that we have today, indeed you would not be allowed to kill. So a person has a child, and you see on Shabbos, you see this, there are lice in a child's head, and you want to take them out. You can take them out, but you can't kill them, because that would be a problem of sheichet. So on Shabbos you're not allowed to bathe. You're not allowed to use shampoo on Shabbos, unless it's already dead. If the shampoo kills it, I don't know the answer. I don't know. But on Shabbos you're not allowed to shampoo your head on Shabbos unless there's a medical condition that requires it. But generally you cannot do the shampoo. The question is, you're sitting at the Shabbos table and the mother sees on her child's head there is lice, so she can take out that louse and she can discard it, but she cannot squeeze it. What?
There is special shampoo.
I know that, right? Okay, but you can't use that shampoo on Shabbos. Shabbos is not a day that you're allowed to shampoo your hair.
Rechitza.
You're not allowed to take medicine on Shabbos. You're not allowed to apply the shampoo on Shabbos, unless the child's head is driving him crazy and it's a tsar. He's in a state of tsar, driving the mother crazy. Well, it's going to infect the other children. No, combing, you're not allowed to comb, or you're not allowed to comb here on Shabbos with a strong brush. Certainly a brush that would remove lice would be also, because that type of comb will definitely pluck out hairs. And plucking out hairs is goes. So you're only allowed to comb your hair on Shabbos with a comb or a brush that is not guaranteed. It's very loose. It's not guaranteed. And the brush also has to be miyuchid for Shabbos, so it should not be uvdo d'chol. Let's go further.
The head, the scalp is itching.
I don't know the answer. I guess they're different. I don't know the answer. Every case has to be evaluated differently. Just itching a little bit, L'chai would not be an excuse. It is itching to the.
I think in Yerushalayim, the lice ladies are open for business on Shabbos.
Not likely. Not likely. Okay, let's see.
No, they have the specialists.
Yeah, yeah. Even here they have specialists.
Yeah, they
even here, all over they have specialists.
Kevon
Shem Misavim Rakman Azeah. Okay, let's see. Mikol Makam Elushim Godem Asul Hargan Elush Noilim Zarkan. You take them, you discard them. Rak Elushim Sabarosh Mutal Hargan. The ones that are found on the head, he says you're allowed to kill, because again, he's disgusting lice, which you cannot see the egg. You cannot see the egg, so you cannot see the egg. The Shoresh, it's not what we call spontaneous generation, then that is not to load of Ariga. Nun Gimel Yesh Lizar Kesheroitza Listoim Teva Eklisha Yesham Zuvuvim. If you have a box, a container in which there are flies, when you close the box, you're trapping the flies, the bees, the insects inside of this box. So that is Malacha of Tzeda. We'll discuss some ideas in a few moments. We'll read a few lines here. Zuvuvim She Yafricham Tchila Mishami. Before you close the box, you should make sure that you first get rid of them. When you close the box, some of their trap there. You don't have to inspect to make sure there's not one fly left. As long as you don't see there's anything there, whatever you see, you can chase away, and that's enough. You can close the box, and that is now. I'll explain in a few moments why this is mutter. Should we want more halacha? Okay, that's it. Then he goes into the halacha of, and it goes into sheichet, a talad of sheichet. Okay, let's review some of the basic yisoides. First of all, there's a general rule that seida only applies to a creature shebeninoi nitzait. That it's the common to trap these type of creatures. In the Mishkan, there was seida for three types of for the elim ho adamim,
for a purpose.
Oh, that's another thing. For a trap for a purpose. But let's first discuss what they trapped in the Mishkan. Everything goes back to the way it was in the Mishkan. They trapped the elim, these certain types of wild animals, which produced rams, which had beautiful hides, which were used to cover the Mishkan. They also trapped the tachash. The tachash was a wild animal which only exists during the time of the Mishkan, and they used its skins for the the third covering on top of the Mishkan, and they also trap the chilazon in order to reduce tcheles. Now these three creatures have in common the fact that they are commonly trapped, or they were. The tachash was a creature which people would seek, would want to acquire for its skin, for the fish. You want to acquire fish, you trap fish because you want to eat the fish, or in the case of the chilazon, you want its blood in order to produce the dye, the tcheles dye. But if you have a creature that in the civilized world, people are just not interested in trapping them, that's called Einoi B'minoi Nitzoid. This type of min is not commonly trapped, then there is no Isser Darais in trapping such a creature. Flies, mosquitoes, are not creatures, flea. These are creatures which in the civilized world no one is interested in trapping. There's no purpose in trapping. These things are rodents. They're pesticides. They want to get rid of them. They want to dispose of them. So therefore, to begin with, there is no issur d'oraisa in trapping these types of creatures. That's why here, let's go back to the case of the box. You have a box. In the box, all of these things are flying around. When I close the box, I'm going to be trapping these things inside. There's no question about it. So it says, don't do it. L'chatchila. It's this midrabanan to trap a creature, even though eino b'mino nitzoid. It's only in, there's no issur d'oraisa, but it's still a midrabanan. But if you do your best to get rid of all of the ones that are in your way, and you don't see anything inside, so at worst, it's going to be a davar she'enei mischavin. It might be a psik resha, but it's a davar she'enei mischavin on something which is only in issur midrabanan. So that's why it's mutter to trap the flies inside. Now let's just jump around from one thing to the other. What about a bee? You mentioned over here a honey bee. This is a very big debate. Rav Yehuda in the Sefer Lamdas Melachos, he has a very beautiful discussion about honeybees. It is a machlekes apoiskim. If a honeybee is something that is in the category of b'minoi nitzoid, do people want to trap bees? If people want to trap bees, then it comes a davar she b'minoi nitzoid, and then it would be an iser de'oraisa to trap a bee in the sukkah on Shabbos. It would be a major, major problem. He concludes that most on Yom Tov too, on Yom Tov, of course, the same exact thing. He concludes that bees are creatures that are enoi b'minoi nitzod. People who harvest, who produce honey, they don't want to trap the bee. That's not what they're trying to do. They're trying to produce an environment that is conducive or is attractive for bees. You're not trying to actually take any bee and trap them and put them into a hive. Adarab, if you trap them in the hive, they're not going to be able to go out and retrieve the pollen and retrieve all the nectar and all of these things. They're not going to be able to be productive. You want them to be free. You don't want them to be trapped. Because when they're trapped, they're not productive. When they're free to roam and do what they need to do, that's when they're able to produce honey. So you don't really want to trap them. You just want to produce an environment which is appealing to them, which is attractive for them to live and be in this environment. Therefore, he concludes that most poskim hold that bees are creatures that are enoi b'minoi nitzot. They're not commonly trapped by the world. Therefore, to trap a bee, to take a bee and to take a cup and put on top of a bee on Yom Tov would not be an Isser D'Oraisa. At worst, it would be as an Isser Midrabanan. Issa midrabanan. Now we're in business. Once only issa midrabanan, if you are afraid they will harm you, they will sting you, even though they only sting if they are provoked, but it's very easy to accidentally provoke a bee just by...
If you're allergic.
If you're allergic, it's mamash sakana. So then it is mutter. It is mutter on Yom Tov to trap a bee in your sukkah by putting a cup on top of the bee when it's on top of your melon or on top of your cake or proteins, your fish or chicken, you're allowed it. Now, l'chatchila, of course, l'chatchila, even that is still, it's only a b'dievet. It's only b'dievet because you are doing a ma'aseh tzeda, you're confining them. It's only midrabanan, but being that it's because of this tzar and this sakana, tzar sakana, it's mutter, but it's not an ideal. So, of course, l'chatchila, a person should try to make use of other techniques techniques that are available to get rid of the bees before Yom Tov. Or by even putting, some say, if you put out food or you put out honey outside the sukkah, they'll gravitate towards the honey or sweet things outside the sukkah rather than come in the sukkah. Or
you buy them.
Or they have different traps. Some of them work, some of them don't work. You can buy electrical gadgets which make sounds and do this and do that. Everyone has a homemade remedy to get rid of the bees. When everything fails, it also depends on the time of the year. When Sukkot is earlier in the year, then it's more of a problem. When Sukkot is later in the year and it's already in fall, it's cold this year, it's going to be pretty late, it's too cold, it's already past the season, there's not going to be that many bees. But everyone has their own home remedy to get rid of the bees.
This past Monday we had a barbecue.
Yeah.
Bees were allowed.
Yeah.
They don't work. But the bee honey in the other table
doesn't work. So you need to have some device. You need to have some high tech, go to Sharper Image. They're still in business. They went out of business. Sharper Image.
Silly enough as it sounds, they said you put. It's supposed to be this on television, the Science Times. Put spearmint gum. Take Wrigley spearmint gum. They hate the.
I keep them away.
Put a few sticks of gum around.
Phil Wrigley, they keep around.
Everyone has a homemade remedy.
I haven't tried it.
Okay, but when worse, when everything fails, you're allowed to do tzedah, but you're not allowed to kill it. You're not allowed to kill the bee. Now, there's another thing. Someone has said that if you take the bee, you trap the bee, you're gonna suffocate the bee. It's gonna die. Because ultimately, if you keep the bee there on the table with a cup on it for a very long period of time, you're gonna kill it. It's gonna die prematurely. So that is a malacha. You're bringing death. And we learned here that you're not allowed under any condition to bring death to a creature because it's a talada of shchita. So the answer is, so don't kill it. When you finish your meal, let it go. The issur tzeda is only to trap. There is no prohibition whatsoever to release. And we think that, you know, when it comes to kosher matir, wherever you can't do, you can't tie, you can't untie. If I'm not allowed to make this knot, automatically, if the knot existed from before Shabbos, or the knot came about in the way, permitted way, I'm not allowed to undo the knot. That principle does not apply with regard to tzeda. You're not allowed to trap. But once already something is trapped, there is absolutely no prohibition to release a creature from its trap. You have a squirrel that's in a squirrel trap, there's no issue whatsoever opening up the trap and letting the squirrel go free. So before your meal is over, you should let the bee go free. Let the bee go free. And that way you will not have caused the bee to die. You will not come into chashash of indirectly causing the bee to die by trapping the bee. Of course, it goes without saying that if the bee is mamish poisonous or it's some type of creature that you've never seen before and it looks really scary, like one of these, who knows, these monster mother bees, and it looks like it's really a sakana. So when it's sakana, then halach is indeed you are allowed to kill it. You are a wasp, you're allowed to kill, because sakana, it's not toilada of shechid. You're not killing it because you want to use its blood or use its hides. You want to kill it because you want to remove a nuisance or a sakana. That indeed will be mutter. Now let's discuss another issue. What about capturing? Is there are two different categories of tzeda. There is what's called loose confinement, and then there is strict confinement. When you capture a creature to the point where you only need to do one lunge, there are different terms, one swoop, one lunge, one act to take it under control, that is called a ma'aseh tzedah. For example, let's say you have a cat or you have a dog, and you want to get the dog into a room. So right now the dog is roaming all over the house. And now by closing the door, it's going to be limited, confined from the entire house to one specific room. Is that a violation of tzedah? So the answer is yes, midrabanan. If something is completely out of your control, and now it has been significantly limited to where it can go, but I can't yet get. If I close the door and the dog or the cat is now in one specific room, I just can't get the dog. If I go into the room and try to put my hands around its neck, it's going to take me. it's going to take me some skill, some sophistication to stand in the right place and trap it further. But my first act of closing the door has limited the dog or the cat from traveling the entire house, the entire property to one room. I've taken it from a place of complete hefkeris to a place that's semi-confined. That type of tzeda is osur midrabanan. It's not osur midraisa. When at Torah tzeda is only osur where you completely confine a creature to a location where all I need to do now to take hold of it is just one lunge, one swoop. If the dog is in a closet, if I close the dog, I lock the dog, even though in the closet, the dog can move around in the closet, it has room to breathe in the closet, but when I go, if I want to go now, pick up the dog, I don't have to move around. The dog might be moving around here and there, but I, in one swoop, can pick up the dog or the cat. That would be called Seda Min HaTorah. That would be also Midaraisa. Now, when it comes to household pets, domesticated creatures like dogs, cats, which are familiar with their owner, which have been living with you for a prolonged period of time, there is no Isser Tzeda. To go and to catch a dog, or catch a cat, which lives in the house with you and is not afraid of you, that's not Tzeda. A child that's crawling on the ground, right? And is running around. You pick up the child. There's no Tzeda. First, that's another issue. There's no Tzeda by human beings. If you have a prisoner who escapes from jail, or you have someone committed in some type of mental institution and they have escaped and they're on the run and you have to save the world from Mashiach. Mashiach is on the loose and you have to save the world and you chap him, there's no tzeda according to most poskim by human beings. No tzeda. By animals, there are two different categories of animals. There are wild animals and there are domesticated animals. Domesticated animals are animals which are comfortable. They live in this home and they are used to you, and if you sweet talk them, they'll come to you, they'll be comfortable to live with you. There's no din tzeda when it comes to these type of animals. Wild animals, or even a new pet, the first Shabbos, person gets a new dog, and the first Shabbos, the dog doesn't really know you, and it takes time, so it says in Riviat Sefer, to go and trap him into the room, that possibly would be a malacha deraisa of tzeda.
What about farm animals?
So different types. Farm animals, he says, pretty much they're like domesticated. There are domesticated animals. Okay, now by the way, with Derek, when we're dealing with animals, there's another shell of muksa. To go touch an animal on Shabbos is awesome. You're not allowed to touch an animal on Shabbos in a normal way. It is muksa. The best you can do is to prod them by touching them by the side. What about taking a dog for a walk on a leash, on a place where there is no Erev? Okay, where there is no Erev. So there are many questions. First of all, there's a child of carrying. There's no carrying because the dog is walking on its own. Now, what about holding on to the leash? The leash is considered the garment of the dog. It's the garment of the dog, so it's not cool that you're carrying the leash. It's tuffle to the dog. Provided, of course, that when you hold on to the leash, a tefach of the leash does not extend. You have to hold on to the very tip of the leash. You must hold on to the tip, because if you hold on to the middle of the leash and to the part that is not using is hanging down, you're not using that to hold on to the dog. So that part would be called carrying on Shabbos in the place where there is no Erev. So you want to take a dog for a walk, you have to hold on to the end. Another thing is the leash may not droop lower than 3 tefachim. You have to hold the leash from high up. The leash has to come from the neck, high up. The leash may not droop below 3 tefachim, because then it will be considered carrying. Okay? So now what about muksa? I'm not touching the dog. I'm not touching the dog, so there is no muksa. Okay, so there's no muksa, there's no carrying. The leash is the dog's garment. I'm holding on to the top of the leash. I'm not letting it droop. There's nothing coming over it, and I'm not letting it droop. Now, what is the next shiloh? Why there should be another problem? Muksa we put out, carrying we put out. Seda By holding on to the dog, I'm confining the dog. If I would not have a leash on this dog, when it sees my neighbor's dog, when it sees the dog across the street, World War III would break out. When it sees a cat or a stomp, maybe the dog just had enough of me. The dog wants to go for a spin. So by me holding on to the leash, why should that not be considered tzeda? I'm trapping the dog. By holding on to the leash, I'm preventing the dog from going somewhere that it otherwise would go. So the answer is no, that's not called tzeda. Tzeda is where the dog is not... Because why is not tzeda? And first I'll explain this, however, maybe I'll explain. Because eventually, the dog's going to come back to you. Dog is man's best friend. And it's not just true with dogs, it's true with birds, and it's true with cats, it's true with any pet. Any pet that has been cultivated, that has been trained, if you let it go, Gesundheit, it'll run or run across, eventually the dog's going to come back to you.
Why is touching a dog muktzah?
It is, because that's just how it is. It's not for the purpose of Shabbos. Anything else is muktzah. Why is a hammer muktzah? A hammer is something you're not supposed to be busy with on Shabbos.
What does muktzah mean?
It's not for your purpose. In order for something, why are you touching it?
What do you use a dog for?
It's not, no, there's different categories of muktzah. Okay, the hammer is not a good example because the hammer is a kli shel lachta l'isser, a rock. It's a muktzah machmas atzmo. Only things that are muktzah on Shabbos are things that enhance your pleasure for Shabbos.
So you're petting a dog doesn't enhance your pleasure?
Chazal's opinion, it does not enhance your avodas Hashem on Shabbos. That's Chazal's opinion. It does not. A pet is muktzah. If the pet is a danger. The only exception when you're allowed to touch a pet is if the pet, let's say, escapes to the house, and you want to bring it back into the house, or it's a danger to others, or it's a danger to itself, or it's or whatever. Those examples. So then you should not touch it in a direct way. You can touch it in an indirect way. Now, obviously, there are a lot of problems in handling pets on Shabbos. These are the three issues. Three issues: muktzah, carrying, and tzeda. All three technically are not problems, because any domesticated creature which anyway comes to you, and now you're just enhancing it by keeping it on a leash and preventing it from running away, it's not going to anyway run away. Tzeda means something that otherwise would be out of your reach. You let go, I'll never see this dog again. That's not true. The dog's not going to run away. The dog's going to come back to you eventually. Who else is going to feed it? It's going to come back to you. That's the way it is. So right now, it wants to go for a run. So right now, I'm confining it. That is not called tzeda in the Torah. It's tzeda in the Torah was a case of creatures that if you would not catch them now, they're out of your reach forever. So these three are not technical issues. However, Moshe says it's still not Shabbistic. It's not Shabbistic to walk a dog on Shabbos, because you do get into these are issues. They're just halachically, they're not also, but still they do border on things that are problematic, especially all three together don't look good. Muktzah, itzah, and tzeda, they're all mamish, just on the borderline of isser. Together in the fringe of the isser, and together it's not. So it's not the right thing to do. A person has a dog. It's not the right thing to walk the dog on Shabbos. However, Moshe says, if you do see your neighbor walking his dog, keep your lips shut. Don't. It's this yesh al milismach. It's perfectly fine, and it's not proper to tell someone you're not allowed to do it.
Get a goldfish.
Why can't you say that the leash?
Yeah.
You're holding it taut, but protecting the dog from running away.
Because you're not
being injured.
But that's not tzeda. Tzeda is.
No, but that's the reason to hold the leash taut.
That's what, but the question is, why isn't that tzeda? I'm confining the dog.
You're protecting the dog. That's not.
You're protecting the dog. So what? You'll say it's a lochash and it's shricha legufa. I'm trapping it for a different purpose. You could be that you're right. It could be that it won't be a melacha deraisa. I'm confining the dog, not because I want the dog. I want to protect the dog from itself. From injury. You want to protect the... So you're right. That's a tzeda, but it's still a tzeda. It's a tzeda that would be a melacha she'in et shrichu legufa, would still be aser midrabanan. If any time you have a creature that is hefker, that is free, and I confine it, that by definition is tzeda. Now there are two categories. Why am I doing the tzeda? Is it a melacha she'tzricha legufa, or melacha she'ein tzricha legufa? Just because it's ein tzricha legufa, it's not for the primary reason, does not make it mutter. It's still going to be yosem midrabanan. What? That is why it's mutter. But let's say you take it out into the street. So it can roam around. By holding it on a leash. Even weekdays, you're not going to let it off the leash, but it's still not defined as tzeda. Because even if you would let it off the leash, and it would roam loose, it's only temporary. It would ultimately come back to you. So it does not fit into the template of tzeda minatara. Not even midrabanan. Not even midrabanan. Because tzeda, by definition, is a creature that otherwise would be out of reach. Now, I've confined it to under my control. A dog, even if there's no leash, and I'm letting it run loose, and the police are knocking on my door and telling me, how dare you let your dog run loose, it's scaring all the neighbors, it's still not called hefker, because the dog will always come back to me. That is the mitzias. And a chanam, if it's not going to come back to you, for example, a dog that's not your dog, right, freshly minted out of the kennel, new dog, and doesn't know you, it's not yet been trained, it's not yet become familiar with its environment, Rav Riviat says you're dealing with an Isser Deraisa to put such a dog on a leash. And Nechanami, he says it's problematic. We're talking over here with a dog that is under your control. Then he just goes off on a tangent about eating. Of course, you're allowed to feed pets on Shabbos. Any creature which you are responsible to feed, you are allowed to feed on Shabbos. So all pets, farm animals, they're your responsibility, you can feed them on Shabbos. You just shouldn't touch them when you feed them, you just put the food in front of them. And the only exception is a dog. A dog, you're allowed to even feed a stray dog. That's what it says in Shulchan Aruch, because stray dogs, they do us favors. They protect us from the ganoven, at least the time of Chazal. Yeah, that's what Chazal say. Chazal say that stray dogs is considered to be mizaynos. So I think we once had this at Shulchan Aruch. Stray dogs, and today, obviously, things have changed a little bit, and maybe you want to redefine the halacha today.
Marching around in the street, so they make sounds. You know, they'll bark.
It used to be that the dogs, by the stray dogs, would protect the people in the city from ganavim. Because the stray dogs, they knew who the people were who lived in the city, and then when they see a stranger coming to the city, they would bark, and so therefore they're considered to be mizaynos of alecha. Maybe you could argue that today that's not so. Could be, maybe you're right. I don't know, but it could be once halacha it's mutter, you don't have a right to change halacha and make new chumras when Iker HaDinah was originally mutter. I don't know the answer, but that's the Rav Yehuda. He doesn't make an exception. He says that stray dogs, no matter what, no one's going to feed a stray dog. You'll be chayish, has rabies. You'll kill a stray dog, right? You'll call the police on that. All these type of dangerous animals, you're allowed to call the police. You're allowed to call three. I guess who we call 911 or 311. You're allowed to call them because if you're chayish that they have rabies, they pose a real sakana for people. It's sakana nefashas. You're allowed to kill them. The leash is considered to be the levush, an extension of the dog.
The dog itself is mukza. Why is the leash mukza?
I hear you, because the tiltal mukza is only on the creature itself, not on the leash. I hear what you're saying. You want to say it's an extension.
What does the word mukza mean to you?
It's set aside.
You can use a knife, but not a shofet's knife, because it's used to killing animals. You don't watch shofet. It's just a knife, but you can't use it. It's mokzah. Nothing wrong with a knife, but this is not the knife. You have to use that knife on shofet. Therefore, it has nothing to do with it. It's not necessary for the performance of shofet. So you don't need to touch it at all. It's not necessary for sure.
I'm asking a different question.
But that's what it means.
No, I want to know why the leash is not.
I want to know why the
leash is considered to be a separate entity from the object itself. There's the object itself, the muksa, the animal itself is the muksa. Then there is the levush. For hilchas Shabbos, it's not called carrying. For hilchas muksa, it's considered separate. Each mitzvah of halacha has its set of rules. For carrying, it's considered to be the levush. For muksa, it's considered to be something distinct. The animal is muksa, the leash is not muksa.
So, but that, it does, I don't understand it. The leash doesn't it's not enhancing my enjoyment of Shabbos.
The leash, you only, the animal needs a walk. In a chanambi, the animal needs to go for a walk. The animal will go out of its mind staying home the whole day. You have to take the animal for a walk on Shabbos.
You just said that the reason the dog is muksa is because it doesn't enhance Shabbos.
The Chazal consider all animals to be muksa. An animal is muksa, you're not allowed to touch the animal. But the animal needs to go for a walk.
What does muksa mean if it doesn't?
It's set aside. It's set aside for mundane purposes.
Right.
Okay, one of the quick yisoid about muksa, this is a general yisoid in the laws, lamdas and lachas. Bederech klal, any malacha that's done to a grama is mutter. If a malacha is done indirectly, it's mutter. The exception, the notable exception to the laws of grama is tzeda. When it comes to trapping, when you set a trap, are you allowed to set a mouse trap on Shabbos? Think about it. What are you doing? I have mice all over the place in the kitchen. So what am I going to do? I'm going to go take out of the closet the glue traps. I got in the box glue traps. I don't have to do any. It's already open. Just take the glue traps and put the glue traps on the floor. So tell me, it's muksa. I'll do it klachayat. Am I allowed to set the glue traps on Shabbos? Am I allowed to set the spring of the mouse trap? Bang! You know the decapitation trap.
You say breakfast.
Okay, am I allowed to set on Shabbos? Why not? What am I doing? Did I trap it? I didn't do anything. It's awesome in Torah because it's a grama. By setting the trap, I'm going to later in the day. By setting the trap, I'm going to cause it to be caught. I'm putting into motion a process where it will be caught. Even though it's not happening at this moment, it's going to delayed effect. It's going to happen at a later point in time. It doesn't matter. That is called Seda Min HaTorah. It's unlike all other malachas. All the malachas have a delayed reaction. Is not awesome in the Torah, and even with the Rabban, it's only grom. And even with the Rabban, there are many times that it's motive for leitzat tzarach. But the nature of tzeda is a malacha whose essence is a delayed reaction. It doesn't happen. So even doing a mice of setting a trap, which is a delayed reaction, would be a malacha deraisa. So you're not allowed to put out on Shabbos glue traps or to put out. Now, what about the poison? Are you allowed to put out the poison on Shabbos? Besides that, it's smokes. Is it a trap? You're just causing it to die. I don't know. Now, by the way, another quick question. There are different types of rodents. There are rodents that travel very slowly, and there are creatures that travel very fast. A turtle. Is it also to trap a turtle? I got a turtle. It'll take the rate it's going. It'll take 20 years to go across my kitchen floor. So am I allowed to go and trap it on Shabbos? Yes. That is not called trapping. The nature of trapping is something which otherwise is it's elusive. If there is a cockroach, they're pretty quick.
Yeah.
But I'm quicker. I can get it. But it's elusive. Something which is elusive is seder. A mouse certainly is seder. But slow-moving vehicles, slow-moving creatures, which are very easy to catch, are not in the category of tzeda, even though if you would let them go for a very long period of time, they would get away. But being that they're so slow, it would not be a category of tzeda. Yeah.
Two questions. One, are you allowed to leave the trap on Shabbos? You said it Friday after a night.
Graf shel rei, if it's detestable in your eyes, then it's no worse than graf shel rei, which can be removed on Shabbos.
Graf shel rei,
excrement, bedpan, a bedpan, or cleaning the table. Why are you allowed to clean the table on Shabbos? It's muksa. All of the leftover dishes, the leftover peels from the
chicken balls.
It's disgusting. Built into the laws of muksa is an exception that something which is detestable may be cleaned, removed, discarded on Shabbos itself. You can take out the garbage. The garbage in the kitchen is, and you have an Erev, it's annoying you. You're allowed to remove the garbage from your home and put it on the side of your house. You're even allowed to remove from the side of the house on a Yom Tov and bring it to the front of the house for garbage pickup if it's disturbing for the garbage to be on the side of the house. When you walk into your door, you have to see it and smell it. I'll bring it to the front, the garbage man will take it away. Are you allowed to take it back, the container's back? That's not so simple, yeah.
My daughter had it, she had mice in her oven and bar stoves. Okay, and the way they exterminated her, the super did it, you plug up the holes where they might come. So let's say Shiloh on Shabbos, you saw a mouse, and you saw the hole he went into. Are you allowed to plug up the hole?
So the answer is yes, as long as it's not with one lunge. If they're already confined, how much are you confining them? You're allowed to go from a loose confinement to a loose confinement. If they're already confined in a loose it all depends on the hole. It depends on how likely it is for them to come out of that hole. I don't know the answer. The question you're asking is complex.
Generally,
you're not allowed to go from an open area to a loose. That's also the Rabban. If a creature is free to roam the world, and now you confine it to a room, so you're going from open to a loose confinement that is also midrabbanan. Minatar, it's only also where it's completely hefker to a tight confinement. That's also minatar. From open to loose is also midrabbanan. From loose to completely confined is also asa midrabanan, but from loose to looser, or looser to loose, whatever it is, that is mutter. So if basically, if you have a dog running around in one room, and in that one room you have another door which can confine it from the whole room to half of the room, that's mutter. Because you have not really changed its halachic status. Until now, it was loosely confined. By me taking these doors and cutting the room into half and putting in the other half of the room, I'm just confining it a little bit more, but I still can't cash in one lunge. So I've not significantly improved the degree of it being trapped. That would be mutar lechatchila. That's not a problem.
Here you are.
So the mouse thing is another issue of the possession.
You just restrict him from that room itself. If he's went into the wall, then he can come out in another room. Guaranteed.
He talks about another example of. There's another important example that he gives. Let's say you have a wasp, or you have a bee, and the bee, and you want to close the window, you want to trap it in the window, but it has a way of getting out. In other words, I'm going to trap it. I want to close the screen door, and the bee is going to be in between the screen door and the door. But on the very, very top, there is a way for it to get out.
It
can get out. Is that say that? So the only thing is the bee has to figure out that there's an opening. So it's mutter. If you confine a creature, to an enclosed area, and there's a way for that creature to escape, but it's not obvious. It's not obvious. That bee is going to have to search and may find a way out, may not find a way out. That's mutter. That's not called seid. Seid is only when it's absolute. When you take a creature and you confine it into an area, there's no way out. But if you confine it into an area where 90% of the time it's not going to get out, because it's just not going to figure out, but technically there is a way out, if it would only search and look, it would find a way out, that is not halacha considered seid at all, and it is mutter. So a bee also. So if you want to trap a bee... Yeah.
He cannot get out once it's
entered. Oh, that's a real bee trap.
There's an opening, but it doesn't have the intelligence to figure
no, out. No, that's called Seda. That's for sure called Seda. It has to be where there's a real possibility.
Bee trap is the Asa.
to set the bee trap, to set the bee trap in the sukkah.
Traps that they use.
Yes. That's you're not allowed to set those. You can set it before Yom Tov. Before Yom Tov. To set, to put the trap on the table on Yom Tov, you're not allowed to do. That's no different. That's no different than taking the cup and covering the bee, which is mutter according to many opinions. A bee is something which is not einoy b'minoy nitzoid. It's not a creature which is typically trapped. So there's no issur d'oraisa of trapping a bee, even l'chatchila. Now it's annoying you. You're afraid it's going to sting. It's annoying you. So chazal amekel, in this instance, you can trap it. Taking a bee trap that you bought in the store, or you bought in a Judaica store, some type of, or online, and putting it on the table for the very first time on Yom Tov itself is no different than taking a cup and putting it on the bee. The best thing is to have it hanging in the sukkah from before Yom Tov. That way, I've done absolutely nothing. That's the chumrah. I've not relied upon the opinions of Eina and Amina and Yitzhak. I've not relied upon the opinions that I'm doing tzedek because it's annoying me. The trap has been set from before Yom Tov, but setting the trap, bringing the bee trap into the sukkah for the very first time would be no different than actually putting the bee. Setting the trap is just like trapping itself. Okay, so these are some of the basic yisaidos. We'll stop here. Next, we go to shaychit. The halacha nun hey is already the sugya, the major sugya of shaychit of blood. Any time of blood being extracted, shaychit.
Yes, thank you. Don't leave that bee trap in the sukkah. You don't want them all coming into the sukkah. You leave outside.
We understand. You put the,
in the sukkah. Can you set the trap there? Shabbos is no Shabbos.
Of course. 100%.